Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Chris Martinson, and really very excited for this podcast today. COVID-19, as you know, I've been covering that for almost 100 days now and trying to figure out what's happening. It's a medical mystery. It's a political mystery. It's upended so many things. 38 kilobits of information, single strand of RNA, has proven to be this complex foe that's made a mess of some complex systems. And chief among that, though, you know, Western healthcare has really been proven to fail in a couple ways, particularly out here in the United States. Sad to say, it's mostly about the politics and the economics of it. But one of the things that's really occurred to me is the way in which we've seen this incredible focus on, we need a vaccine, we need a vaccine, we need a vaccine. That's Louis Pasteur's germ theory. There's a germ and we have to fight it, and almost entirely missing is the other side of that story, which is the so-called terrain theory of the French, which is our bodies is the terrain. Our bodies fight things off all the time. That's part of it, right? So it needs to be both. Yes, there's this germ we have to confront with policies and with vaccines, and how can we take best care of our body? So I wanted to go right to the source. I want to talk with somebody very exciting, Sergey Young. He is out in the forefront of talking about how we can be as healthy as we can be, and his mission, and Sergey, I'll let you say it in case I botch it here, but the mission is to find a way for people to live 200 years in the body of a 25-year-old. So right at the forefront of figuring out what can our bodies do, how can we best optimize the terrain that already exists? Because our bodies are amazing machines. They are. I want to bring that part of the conversation in, and as well, talk with an inspiring, futuristic sort of a person who is very thoughtful, and this is a time where we need a lot of thoughtfulness because everything's being upended. Sergey, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Chris, and you know, thanks to everyone. I'm very excited to be here today with you.
Well, let's jump right in it. What has COVID-19? Obviously, this is what's on everybody's mind right now here today in April of 2020. What sort of lessons are you drawing from COVID at this point, Sergey?
Yeah, I mean, like for everyone, first few weeks of, you know, what is happening was a complete shock to me. And then I started to realize that it's just amazing opportunity to learn a few lessons. So I started to draw some of them, and I started to share it with my network, and I'm very, you know, happy to share it today. Well, first of all, we just need to realize, and it's a very personal story. So I've been to North Pole a few years ago, and last year I went to South Pole. And so when you've done both poles, you're kind of thinking, so what's next? And I was seriously considering go to Mount Everest. You know, I've done some hiking when I was, you know, particularly young during student's time. But when I was looking at statistics, so what's your mortality rate? What's your risk rate if you're going to climb Everest? And it was, at this time, it was somewhere between 5% and 6%. So if you look at coronavirus mortality rates today in some of the countries, well, it's exactly, you know, figure like that. So I think, and it does support the idea that we're living in during kind of extraordinary period of our life, is that we all need to climb our personal Everest these days, right? It does require a lot of thoughts, a lot of resilience, and a lot of wisdom. There's so many things that we cannot fix, but I want to concentrate, you know, on the things that we can fix. So few lessons which I find particularly striking. Number one, you know, our civilization is so fragile. I mean, it's amazing. We're so, you know, used to live in a comfortable world. And then until we realized just a few, you know, months ago that, you know, this safety was perceived safety. This is before the black swan, before the next very unexpected shock. And it's time to embrace uncertainty. It's time to embrace that we can be and we will be fragile in certain period of our life, you know, us as human beings and us as civilization. So that's kind of number one. Number two, I was listening to, I think it was Eric Prince, a few years ago, and he's obviously, you know, involved in the military stuff, and it was public lecture, but he was quoting someone saying, it's not what you know will kill you. And this is about that, you know, sometimes we do expect crisis from the direction that we know, but the best and the massive crisis, I mean, they actually can, you know, going to come from direction that you don't expect them to do. So I remember December 2019, I was speaking at a huge conference. I think it was in LA Public Library, and there was a lot of young people in the audience. And the question was, well, Sergey, I mean, you said you're expecting the crisis in year 2020, and I was expecting the crisis since 2014. So, mm-hmm. you know, I finally reached the point when my forecast, you know, matched the reality after, you know, 6 years. And then economy is booming. Unemployment is at a particularly low rate. World is kind of, you know, young and beautiful these days. Like, there's no signs of anything crisis-like coming to us. And then my point was that Black Swan will arrive exactly from direction that we're not expecting it to arrive from. So it's very humbling. It's changed our definition of our life risk, you know, lives for ourselves, for our families, for the loved ones. And sometimes you just need to be wise to understand that there's so many things that we don't know and we don't expect it to happen. So, you know, think about known unknowns. So that's my lesson number two. Are we going in the right direction, Chris?
Sure.
Because I have a few more lessons to share with the audience today. Lesson number three is that specifically in US and in Western culture, the culture and cult of money is specific in the last few decades became pretty much a driving force. And, you know, I'm part of it, right? We're all part of it to a certain extent. But I think this kind of Everest climbing type of mortality risk and what is happening around us and with us today, give us another lesson, is that we start to learn and come to the basics. What matters the most to us? And I'm talking about loved ones. I'm talking about health. And you remember the old saying, you know, health is wealth. And it's striking. I have few friends who just hated their jobs, you know, hated their office environment. And they were not particularly positive people when it goes to like Monday morning and running to the office. And I just had a chat with a few of them last week. And they were like, you know what? I actually realized the thing that I kind of hated the most was my job and my time in the office was a matter of my social realization, was a driving force behind my professional development and personal development as well. And it was amazing how many happiness and self-fulfillment, you know, our jobs and all our, you know, other activities brought to us. So in actually practicing gratitude, and being grateful that we all alive, you know, we can see, you know, our family and friends, you know, we can take care of our dogs or cats, you know, these days. It's coming back to the basics, what makes us human and what makes us happy. So that's been an amazing discovery for me and amazing lesson as well. Yeah, two thoughts on the lessons from coronavirus. I remember my shock, specifically in the first 2 weeks. And I was basically, you know, stuck at home, and I was alone. I mean, obviously with family, with my loved ones, but it's completely different feeling that you cut these social bonds that you had in the physical environment with your friends, with your colleagues, with, you know, people in the audience, like we see today, but in particular, you know, conference or, you know, portfolio companies that we invest in, which, you know, work with longevity technologies. So this drama, this shock of self-isolation is an opportunity for all of us to reconnect with ourselves, you know, being comfortable with being alone, being comfortable with being fragile human, right? And then, you know, focus on our external dialogue. This great research done by Barclays Investment Bank last year. And what I've discovered that before invention of smartphones, our attention span was like 15 seconds. And, you know, goldfish in a bowl, attention span was like 9 seconds. You know, after we get our smartphones, you know, our attention span is actually 8 seconds. It's shorter than the, you know, fish in the bowl, you know, attention span. So it's time to do digital detox, and it's time for us to reconnect with ourselves. And then, you know, final lessons for me is, you know, if Greta Thunberg was not enough, you know, for the wake-up call for all of us, what is happening? I think Mother Nature is just sending us a signal. Yeah, we were so irresponsible in terms of how we treat environment, how we treat, you know, Mother Nature, how we treat the planet. And, you know, the fortunate outcome of extremely unfortunate is sad times when we lose so many people, is, you know, the environment is becoming clear. I live nearby to the park, and, you know, I have an opportunity to walk with my dog for a few minutes a day. And it's just amazing the amount of, you know, biodiversity, the type of birds that I've seen this spring is just amazing, right? And again, it's a very sad time for many of us, and there's so many lives lost, there's so many uncertainty and fear in the air, but I think it's time to get this wake-up call from Mother Nature. So coming back and, you know, finalizing my story about, you know, my coronavirus lessons is that we just need to embrace and see the fact that when we face the risk of death, similar to what we would face if we would climb out the highest mountain on Earth, it's a time for wake-up calls, and it's time for lessons for all of us.
Sergey, thank you for all of that. And I'm, you know, I'll do my best to remember what you said 9 seconds ago. you know, I think it was 2009. I might be off a year or so. I was speaking at InnoTown in Ålesund, Norway. And I have this talk I give, and this is the subject of where I really want to get to with you in part, is I have this talk. I talk about exponentials, but from a dangerous standpoint, right? So I talk about exponential resource depletion, the fact that ecosystems are complex creatures, meaning we can't predict how they're going to behave. They have emergent behavior. So right. We're messing with billions of years of evolution and 100-million-year-old ecosystems. And so I have sort of a cautionary tale. And so I give my whole song and dance. And I learned that people in Norway don't do jokes quite the same as we do in America. So it was very, very stony-faced audience, you know. Okay reception, but it was I wasn't sure I was being received. And then the person who spoke right after me is Peter Diamandis, who you know very well. And he was speaking a very different talk about exponentials, which was the other side of that, right? And it was a little awkward, but we both, you know, said good talk and went our ways. And I have to say, in the 10, 11 years since, I think we're both kind of right, we're both kind of wrong.
Yeah, exactly,
And so I was wondering, you know, what's your view on you know, what is the role of technology? We're learning it's a two-edged sword, it has some promise, but there's some things it can't do. So so where do you fall on this idea of are things getting exponentially better, or are the risks accumulating?
So what do I think on that? I think if the world going to be created or, you know, full of or can consist of 100% of people like Peter Diamandis and me, we will be in very dangerous category, right? So we actually need you, Chris. We need the public, right, to provide the balancing act to look at the, you know, every dimension and particularly risk dimensions of technology, okay? So my paradigm that, you know, no one on this planet will be able to see, you know, all the upsides and downsides of technology. And it's huge work of collaboration, of us listening to each other and looking at, you know, at the questions, what can go wrong, how we balance that, right? How we regulate that, or how we don't get access to that. And it's, I'm preparing my TEDx talk now. It's called Morality of Immortality. Mm. And funny enough, you know, I'm not a huge fan of immortality, by the way, right? I do think if you take the death from the human life cycle, I mean, we will lose our civilization, right? So, but funny enough, we, in few decades of time, we'll reach the point when we ready for, you know, indefinite, ex- in expansion of our lifespan by a number of reasons. So one, medical technology will give us an opportunity to do that through replaceable body parts to human brain AI integration. So that's going to be technically possible. Number two, I'm a great believer that we will resolve resource constraints with renewable energy, with taking the better care about, you know, Mother Planet, with better managing our food cycle, right, to make longevity affordable and accessible for everyone. You know, longevity is a thing which would unite the nations rather than kind of continue to separate them. But the biggest question why, you know, if you look even like in the US audience, which is usually, you know, super interactive, super positive, 80 to 85% of people don't like the idea of life extension. The reason being is that there's huge, you know, number of moral and ethical issues that we need to solve before we'll embrace longevity, before we'll embrace life extension, and before we embrace, you know, immortality as a concept. And there's so many ethical things that we need to solve. So, I'm a super positive person. That's why you need to have a lot of balancing kind of negative views and or critical views on this whole thing. So, just number of things, you know, immortality, if this is available to everyone, going to be available to dictators, right? So think about, you know, North Korea. You know, I wonder if we want to have, you know, the same dictator in North Korea for another 100 or 200 years. What will happen, you know, to the country, to the population, to the earth, right? Or, you know, what about, you know, social structures, right? You know, I was born at the time, this is what I've seen from my parents and grandparents. Then it's, you know, one life, one marriage, one job. This is changing. You know, 67% of marriages, you know, is broken up, depending on what kind of country you're looking at in developed world, is going to divorce in 3 to 5 years from the marriage, right? So what needs to happen with our social structure? And, you know, and final thoughts on that, if, and this is on the positive side, if we're going to live longer, does it give us the hope that we're going to be more responsible for what we're doing, right? So throwing plastic in the ocean and living longer will, you know, give us an opportunity or risk to face consequences of our actions. So hopefully this will drive more responsible behavior for us. But I agree with you, Chris. There's so many, you know, ethical, social, and regulatory questions that we need to face on this road. So I'm actually happy we can have this dialogue and we can have this argument. It's not a black and white issue.
Great. I'm really glad to hear you say that. And for me, population, okay? Given so in my lifetime, I'm 57 now, animal population has been halved, you know, in terms of biomass. And the oceans, yeah. I can tell you as a fisherman, stripped clean, right?
Yeah.
And so here's a simple example of one technology. I'll call it GPS. Before GPS, fishermen would leave from Massachusetts. They would motor out like 6 or 8 hours, some dead reckoning, and they'd throw their lines over their side or their nets, and they'd run around. After GPS, they could stop and start 6 inches to the left of where they went, and they scrape the oceans clean. And it's going to take another generation, I think, for fisheries management to catch up with that simple technology.
Right.
And so I look at this and let's talk food for a second. You've seen the reports, right? UK soil scientists say we have 60 harvests left because the way we're currently managing soil is strip mining it. It's a mining operation. Macro and micronutrients are being pulled out.
It is.
Living soil is being turned into dirt, if I can make that distinction. And you only can do that so many times, and then you basically are out of options unless you're in a full nutrient replacement cycle. Very complicated to even fix that. So my question would be, are humans ready to expand their population given our current track record?
Yeah. So great question. Number one, just a bit of context. Whatever the graph and forecast you see, we probably in the current, I couldn't call it business model, in the current living model and economic model in the world, we're very likely to hit 10 billion kind of figure in terms of our population, and then it would start to decline. Because with every, you know, every country which you go through, you know, almost exponential growth of GDP per capita, the reproductive rate is just close to one. So that's one. But it does not mean that we need to solve the issues that you just highlighted, right? Moreover, right, I think in terms of legacy, in terms of being happy and being part of the ecosystem, we need to solve it. So I do believe technology is a little bit like a hammer. Yeah, you can use it to, you know, kill it someone, or you can use it to build a house, right? And you know, obviously, I'm not the only one in the world thinking about this. But where do I see, you know, my role and role of Longevity Vision Fund, right, which supports, you know, longevity and eco-friendly technologies, is to provide the sources of breakthroughs. But then, knowing what we know about humans, I think it should be a combination of stick and carrot. So if you think about, like, you know, only about the carrot, which is, you know, providing different breakthroughs through longevity technologies or food tech technologies. So we're currently investing in the plant-based meat and fish and seafood, right? We're going to announce this investment in the next month or so. I mean, it's just amazing what clean meat or plant-based meat, you know, can do to our food cycle. It's, you know, low calories. It doesn't have, you know, dangerous substances like, you know, hormones or antibiotics. It doesn't have, you know, all the harmful bacteria. And it doesn't really require you to have, you know, all these poor animals in industrial farms, or to reach these precious resources in the sea or in our rivers, like, you know, fish or any other creatures. And so this is what I provide. This is where I see my mission. But then let's not forget about regulation, right? And this is where globalization was helpful, is to understanding that the role of government and the role of world organization in terms of protecting Mother Nature, you know, protecting the creatures, and make our relationship with nature as the more equal ones, rather than, you know, us taking all the time these precious resources. So I'm concerned as well as you, and probably a substantial part of our audience today. And where I do see my role is providing this, you know, opportunity, resources for breakthrough technologies to be developed and to happen, and therefore make the world a better place.
I love the vision. You know, I started as a scientist, I'm still a scientist, but I started by looking at data and tearing apart things like how much oil is actually left in the ground. And I'm not against using it, but if we're going to use it, where are we going with it? I'm also a businessman, spent a lot of time in the business world. So there I did a lot of strategy development. And strategy development is always the same thing, very complicated ones. You know, BCG's got a different one,
right?
But they all boil down to this: where are we going? How are we going to get there? What's the vision? What are your resources? On the resource side, I see that, you know, it's a finite number and we'd better use them wisely if we want to get to this, you know, new future we want to get to. And so at heart, I'm a conservationist in the sense that I really don't want to go backwards. People sometimes misinterpret my message and hear it as Malthusian. Oh my God, you're saying there's limits and all of that. And I had to wander over to psychology and neurobiology to understand that we have an optimism bias wired in. Nature graciously gave us that. So I think, how do we begin to balance the optimism bias against the realities without the realities just being perceived as negative and dismissed because people have a psychological bias against them? Because they both, I like how you put it, we need both of those fully in frame to really get where we're going if we're going to have a good strategy, right?
Yeah, I agree. Look, I think to call it conservative approach is a little bit unfair. And the reason being because, and then what I like, you put two questions is, and the question one, you know, what are we doing? And the question two is how we execute on that. And the problem with human beings, and specifically in our democratic societies, that within the execution process, our messages, our decisions, they're starting to deviate, right? They start to be influenced, they're becoming softer, etc. So, you know, my belief, you need to put, you know, pretty direct, and some people can call it conservative message across, and then life will soften it anyway. Regulation will soften it anyway. Diversity of opinion will soften it. So, you know, I'm a big fan of you know, radical steps, because on their way to implementation, they're becoming less radical. And then if we have democratic process in place, we will accommodate other people's views, but you need to be radical. So this is the reason behind my 200 years lifespan message, right? I'm actually, if you look at the current state of technology, it's just impossible to live 200 years. But this is my way to get an attention, because if I start to discuss with you and you know, our love audience, guys, this is how we're going to live 100 years, and this is five things that you need to do. They're like, well, Sergey, come on, we heard this before. This is pretty boring. So the unfortunate reality, I need to shock you with 200 years and then tell you that it's actually three different horizons. One thing that we can do today to live 200. Mm-hmm. The other thing, when the technologies that we're investing in from Longevity Vision Fund will be available to us in 10, 20 years. And there's going to be an opportunity to live probably to 150, whatever the number is, and to break this sound barrier of 120 years, which is the, limits established by evolution for our bodies and for our minds. And then third horizon is visionary one, where we all can use the kind of robotic or digital avatars, replaceable body parts, etc. So, you know, frankly speaking, we are in this world not only kind of to think, but also to do. And to do something, you need to be radical sometimes. And then life will balance your message. Life will balance your idea when we go to execution stage.
I love it.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah. My I have almost a daily practice of challenging myself in mentally. I run up against something. So like, some math is at the edge of what I can do, or a new biological concept that I don't get, you know, because I find that after I've done that and I sleep on it, the next day it's just a little bit easier. And so it's just a basic exercise program. So let me tease apart this quantity versus quality thing. So 200 years is quantity. Yeah. How tell us about what you're looking at now and the technologies we either currently have or are soon to come that will enhance the quality of it. Like, how can I be healthier and all of that? I think that's what a lot of people would be interested in.
Okay. So first thing that we need to be prepared of is that quality of our lives is, and our lifespan. So we use the term health span, right? Because I'm interested in extending healthy and happy years rather than, you know, the last five, the most fragile years of our life. So, and in fact, and that's why I call it boring, a lot of people know how to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And then the five things is, you know, when I have my 30 seconds on longevity, I send everyone to do their annual health checkup. This is the most important thing because, you know, remember 20 years ago, cancer was kiss of death. Not anymore. For five main type of cancer, your recovery rate's 93 to 100% these days. And the one huge assumption, you do very early diagnostic of that. So make sure every year, so for me, it's January. I'm going to Human Longevity Center in California. You know, this May, I'm meant to go to Japan. Japan has amazing healthcare system to do my annual checkup. Or you can go to hospital next door. It's not a rocket science, right? Make sure you catch cancer, you catch heart disease, you catch diabetes early on, so you can work on that. So that's number one. And then, and this is where technology helpful is that we're investing a lot in early stage and early cancer diagnostic, because cancer and heart disease is the two killer monsters. They kill more than 50% of people after they turn 50 years old. So that's one. The other thing is you know, again, boring is not smoking, drive responsible, establish whatever your state's limit. You know, have zero alcohol tolerance while driving. So I call it passive longevity. Just don't do a stupid thing, you know. And then food, you know, food is amazing. And I have this, you know, the reason I have number of copies of books here, I'm just spreading this to people, right, who come to see me in my office. You know, the single change that we can take to take back control of our life and the healthy state is to change in the food system, right? Mm-hmm. And then do a lot of plant-based and, you know, decrease the calories. Sport is another one. And funny enough, if you look at technologies, this is Fitbit, right? And some people use Apple Watch, Samsung Watch, etc. It's just a few years ago, it was just counting my steps. And it's important to do 10,000 steps a day. It's super important for your kind of heart system health. But right now it's becoming personalized healthcare device. You know, Apple Watch can do electrocardiogram, can detect when you fall down in the street, can call ambulance for you. And then, so you know, it's start to it will, in few years time, will get like 95% of the tracking information to assess your health, right? So that's important. And then peace of mind, like mental exercise that you just mentioned, meditation, act of kindness every day, working with your sleep, which is also, you know, Fitbit, Apple Watch, whatever the gadget you have is also helpful in terms of tracking this, you know, sleep cycle. So that's your job number one. It's your like Monday morning change that you need to do. So this gives us another 10, 15 years to wait for the outcome of technologies that we're investing in. And three most promising technologies that I'm very excited in and we invest in it. One is gene editing and gene therapy. Just amazing. And then, you know, the reason we can have such a quick response to coronavirus in terms of vaccine development, in terms of, you know, developing the test, I think US itself have like 50 approved tests against coronavirus. And it's a course of like 2 months, right? And the reason is that we've been able to sequence genome of this virus in the course of 1 month. 25 years ago, it was just impossible at all, right? So that's technology number one is gene editing and gene therapy. Technology number two is, you know, anything related to the stem cells. And we're investing in this together with, you know, other biotech investors and with, you know, big pharma. Technology number three is organ regeneration and replaceable organs. And, you know, you look at liver. As far as I recall, there's a huge waiting list of people, you know, waiting for this. And it can be anywhere between 1 and 3 years in the U.S., right? And it's $700,000 to $800,000, you know, type of surgery. And we just invested in the company together with Juvenescence. It's another great investor in longevity area, which use our lymph nodes to regrow the liver, right? So they take donor liver, they split it in 50 to 80 pieces. They use laparoscopic, not really invasive operation to put it in your lymph nodes. And then in 6 months time, you have supporting liver. You have like liver B inside your body. I mean, it's amazing. They're obviously in the testing stage. We need to wait a few years before they will go through, you know, FDA approval, and it's going to be, you know, common and available operation. But this is the type of technologies which would help us to support the most fragile parts of our body. Again, there's nothing available today, but this is going to be available in the next 5, 10, 15 years. So, but we need to stay in the breach. So come back to my, you know, horizon one. Yeah, you know, take back, you know, control of your health and your daily routine.
Super glad to hear you talk about food. It's my number one thing. For the past month, I've been telling people who've been listening to my coronavirus channel, plant a garden. I think there's some disruptions coming because, you know, we can't get the migrant workers in the field, so we might be short on fresh fruits and vegetables, but you'll be outside, yeah. You'll be getting that natural vitamin, you know, D from the sun, but you'll also be connecting with plants and growing them and eating much better food that's better for you and all of that. So I really think, you know, this is going to be a little bit, some of what COVID's going to give us is going to, my great grandparents would be like, oh yeah, of course. You want community, you want good friends, and you want to know where your food's coming from. Of course, you know, but so that's all good. I'm surprised. Can you talk on technology four? You mentioned three, but I've kind of been thinking, Sergey, that AI, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic learning programs. Because to me, when I go to a doctor, I feel like I'm running into a decision tree, you know, where they go, you know, fever, no fever, fever, okay, febrile, you know.
Yeah.
It feels like this is just perfectly primed to take 95% of what doctors do on the front end,
leave
the art at the edge of it, you know, to the skilled practitioner. But isn't there a role here for AI to take my blood, and sift through 1,000 variables and genomic sequences and give me
an answer? Exactly. And I think the beauty of AI is not only kind of managing complexity, but also to establish, you know, very unusual correlation between one and another, right? So look at coronavirus. There's a Canadian company called Blue Dot, right? And they provide, you know, AI-based and machine kind of big data type of intelligence for spikes of unusual kind of health-related events around the world. Just looking at social media activity and other data that they scan, I mean, they immediately realized there's something going in Wuhan, and they made actually they sent a note, warning note to their clients 10 days before World Health Organization did the same for the rest of the world. So that's I think is amazing. And also I think AI is very complementary for today's doctor's job, and you know, combination of both, you know, give our doctors, give our medical professionals more time to spend with us, with the patients, right? So they don't need to go and bother themselves and yourself with the typical question, which is already in your electronic record, which is already measured by, you know, different scans or your personalized health device. And so I'm actually, you know, I'm thinking that combination of AI and different technologies and with our, you know, healthcare system and with our doctors, you know, give more time, you know, to our doctors and therefore more self-realization for them to do their, you know, job properly rather than just to stare in the computer to do like a record of your visit or ask you the same questions again. So I'm completely, you know, on the same page with you. And I think it's a huge opportunity, and it's not either or, it's combination of both.
Yeah. And, it seems to me that like, if we did also AI, so I was working on this think tank, and there's some guys there from DARPA, and they're running a complexity modeling challenge, right? So it's sort of like the XPRIZE. They're throwing a little bit of money out there. And for people who don't know, I'll let you explain it. But XPRIZE said, let's put some money out there, $10 million, to see if we can initiate space travel in the private sector, which before the XPRIZE was all NASA. Yeah. And all of a sudden, it unleashed $100 million of private chasing of that. So it was a very high leverage. Well, DARPA said, maybe we could do this for AI because humanity, our problems are too complex for us as humans to manage anymore. And my hope, Sergey, is someday we will initiate AI and it'll parse through everything, maybe in a quantum computer, and it'll say, hey, don't grow cotton in Arizona. That's a bad idea. You know?
I agree. Yeah, that's amazing. So that's why I love, you know, XPRIZE Foundation. And you're right, the first, you know, XPRIZE competition was the creation of first private spaceship. And today we know this is Virgin Galactic, right? It's the rights for this ship was actually bought by Richard Branson. And that, so my dream, and we're starting design process for that next month, is to do age reversal competition for technologies, which will help us to live longer and, you know, healthier and happier life. So I do hope that we can launch it next year, and it's going to be 200 teams all around the world providing their technologies, you know, and measure the impact of their intervention, whether it's fasting, you know, drugs, you know, any particular technologies, to measure age reversal impact of that, just using by kind of biological clocks. And biological clocks is just set of, you know, indicators, almost like a blood sample that you give, and then you look at different measures and you measure how old or how young are you against your kind of calendar years. Yeah. Hmm. So we're working on that. I'm actually sponsoring this for the last year and a half, but there's so many amazing people involved there from XPRIZE side, from academic community like Aubrey de Grey, Steve Horvath, Terry Grossman. And over longevity is such a grateful theme. And, you know, it's just, it's really unifying for, there's no sense of competition. The only thing that we find is aging and age-related disease. So it's been an amazing experience for me, and I'm looking forward to launch this competition next year.
Oh, that sounds fabulous. I would love to see one launch for battery technology. I would love for my government, instead of $10 billion to the banks to administer loans in this most recent handout, put $1 billion out, dangle it out there. Anybody who can solve batteries, you know, using a common chemistry with a certain density, dangle it out there and see what happens, you know?
I agree.
That would mean a lot. So I love that story of how the XPRIZE, you know, really, it's incentives, right? You show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome, right? That's what Charlie Munger says. So listen, I know we're up against your time here. I did want to mention your website, SergeyYoung.com, and you've got a book coming out. I see the countdown going. Growing Young. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So if you want to, you know, stay in contact, just sign up for my newsletters on SergeyYoung.com. So that's the easiest way to do. And, you know, I'm just very excited to work with 2025 longevity pioneers all around the world. to write a book about technologies. And we mostly invest in Horizon 2, which is, you know, technologies which I mentioned today already, like gene editing, you know, use of AI for diagnostic or for drug development, artificial organs or replaceable organs, etc. But there's some exciting stuff that we, you know, working on as well when we're investing a little bit of our money, like, you know, human avatars. So I'm having the call with a company from Japan. And Japan, with its kind of love to robots, is a perfect place to develop avatars. And actually working on the first prototype of robotic avatars these days. So there's going to be a section on that. But overall, I think what I wanted to share in my book is the, you know, overall excitement about, you know, different technologies, which is currently in development stage, to provide all of us the motivation to, you know, stay in the breach, take control of our health, you know, be in a healthy state and happy state in the next 10, 15 years. So then when we reach, you know, longevity breakthrough, you look at your own body and your mind and you think, okay, well, this is worth, you know, life extension, right? You don't want to be your body and your mind and your conscience to be in fragile state. So that's the whole idea of the book. And obviously, you know, since my mission to change 1 billion lives and bring longevity technology in the most affordable and accessible way, you know, a book will be important, that important part of that. So, but that's, this will come in probably 10 months time. And, but I'm very excited to work on that. There's so many exciting things happening in this field.
All right, Sergey, I have to ask, since we're on books and based on our conversation, if I was in your office with you right now, which book would you give me?
Okay. So this is my favorite one. So this is Eat to Beat Disease, amazing book. And it's almost like small encyclopedia, which is goes from, you know, theoretic basics, how food is important for your health, to kind of particular food choice, how to use the food to change your body and to change your health. So, you know, amazing book. Again, you asked me to offer one book. This, the other one, which I love, is it's called Happiness Hypothesis. That's amazing. This is the best book on the review of different theories of happiness. It was a break, you know, huge breakthrough for me to realize what makes us happy.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for that. And I'll be getting both of those books. So consider that handed out. And I really appreciate that. So, Sergey, thank you so much for your time today.
My great pleasure.
Yeah, SergeyYoung.com. Check it out and sign up for the newsletter. And I'll be looking forward to your book, Growing Young, when it comes out. So I agree. Let's have the balance. We need both types out there, optimists and I don't use pessimists. I call myself a realist, but
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. Okay, Chris.
All right.
It was great conversation. And, you know, to all of our, you know, of our audience, stay healthy.
Fantastic.
Stay safe.
And grow a garden. All right. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye.